Fancy a game?
Free flow of information is the only safeguard against tyranny.
Oh, some of the toughest players I've come up against didn't really know what they were doing.
Beware of thieves, who would deny you access to information, for in his heart, he dreams himself the master.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Hello, Las Vegas. I'm Tyler Bischoff. He's Jared Justice. Do you think Clay and Ed are messing with us now?
You mean after all those times I left open random Google searches, you think they're now trying to like get their revenge?
From... Yeah, because like the television's in here. One's on SportsCenter, but one's on Spanish TV.
Well, I mean, I assume they like cartoons as much as the next guy.
Okay. I mean, we used to leave the TVs on cartoons for them. Teen Titans, Peppa the Pig.
Who doesn't like cartoons?
Clay and Ed on the press box. Like, what is this? Australia TV, whatever that is.
When you said it the first time before, when I was trying to set up the intro, I genuinely thought it was Australian TV, and I got like stupidly excited.
Nope, we're not going down that rabbit hole. Jesse Granger's going to join the show today. He's going to be live from City National Arena earlier than practice starts. I wanted to talk to him like as practice was happening, but they don't practice till 11. So, but he'll still be there. I'm sure there'll be fans that are there that early too. So talk to him live from City National Arena. We're going to do a lot of UNLV today. We got some UNLV football later in the show. But we're going to start with the Runnin' Rebels because I still got topics. I still got content on UNLV basketball, and that's what you want, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shakur Justin defers the go-to guy role. Hot takes to start the season.
Who would be the go-to guy if it's not him?
That's the scary part.
Yeah.
Mike Grimala wrote about this in The Sun. Last year, Justin was second on the team in points, 14.6 a game. Three of the other top four scorers last year are gone. Like, very clearly, Shakur Justin is the guy that's supposed to step into that role. Marvin Menzies loves his bigs. He loves to run post-up plays. It should be a massive year from Justin. But he sort of deferred that role when he talked to the media, which I think is less about his mentality and more about just the way Shakur Justin tends to talk to the media. Like, he's good to talk to, but he seems to have been trained, or at some point, like, he is very good at not saying anything remotely like controversial. Like, you can ask him about any player and any type of skill that player may or may not have, and he'll say, oh yeah, he's great at that. So that's what I think this is. It's just how Justin talks to the media. He's going to be the go-to guy.
So wait, do we have old sound bites of him saying how good Brandon McCoy is at defense?
We do not have that. He did say Tervell Beck was a great three-point shooter last year, and I think Tervell Beck, granted, he made like 55% of his threes, but it only took like 11 or something like that. Like, he was 6 of 11 last year, and it was like, oh yeah, he's a great three-point shooter. It's like, okay, he doesn't shoot very many. But yeah, he'll always tell you that so-and-so is great at blank if you ask him. Noah Robotham was asked about being a senior leader, and he sort of gave a similar deferential answer, saying like, yeah, I'm a senior, but like, his phrase was, we're a team of leaders amongst leaders. Which is like when the Golden Knights say, we don't have a captain, we have 23 captains. But I genuinely expect Justin to be awesome. He's kind of the only like known commodity UNLV has. I mean, Robotham at Akron had 3 years where he averaged 9 points every single year, and he shot like 38% from three every single year. Like, he had steady years. So we can probably know what to expect out of him, but it was at Akron, and UNLV's a little bit of a step up. But for the rest of the roster, I mean, you're hoping Amori Hardy takes a big step when he's a sophomore. You're hoping that Tervell Beck does the same as a sophomore. You got freshmen like Bryce Hamilton, Trey Woodbury. Are they good freshmen? Like, we'll see. The rest of it is a bunch of question marks outside of Justin. So he's the go-to guy. I wouldn't be too worried about that. But now we're going to do some lineup guessing.
Woo!
You should be excited. Okay, Marvin Menzies is like intentionally uninformative when you ask him about like who's going to play what position or who's going to start. Like, he does not like labeling guys as starters. Like, he doesn't like labeling guys into positions. He'll always tell you it's more important who wins the game and that type of stuff. He was asked specifically, like, is Noah Robotham, you know, your starting point guard? And his response, he wouldn't say yes to that. His response was just, well, I think we all assume Noah's going to play a lot of minutes.
Huh.
So that's about as much info as you'll get out of Marvin Menzies when you ask him about starters and stuff like that. And even the players, to a point, sort of are taking after his lead, because I asked Noah about, hey, or, you know, you see yourself as the starting point guard or something else. And he was like, yeah, I mean, I've always been a point guard, but if the coaches want me to play something else, I'll play something else. You ask any of those guys. Tervell Beck, who played small forward and power forward last year, what do you see yourself as? He won't even say what he sees himself as. It's just, I'll play whatever the coaches ask me to play. So, like, he's got that ingrained in his players as well. So you can't really gain anything by asking any of the coaches or players about positions. But we're going to do some guessing anyways.
Who else could be the starting point guard? Like,
Maury Hardy could be.
Okay.
Hardy was a point guard in high school. Played some point guard, especially at the end of last year. They gave him a lot more minutes at point guard.
See, I was always thinking of him more as a two.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I see him as well. But he's better offensively in the half court with the ball in his hand, so he's kind of the point guard. He told Grimala of the Sun that they're not going to have a traditional point guard, shooting guard lineup that's going to be both of them are point guards and both of them are shooting guards at the same time.
Ooh.
Uh-oh.
Where does Jay Green fit? Because that's...
the end of the bench.
Oh. I just need more sound bites.
Of what?
Of Jay Green.
Why?
Australia.
Oh. I didn't talk to him. I should have gone and talked to him.
I like fun accents.
So, we'll start with point guard.
Okay.
Noah Robotham is the starter. He's the point guard. He'll play as many minutes as Marvin Menzies will get out of him.
Is there a sort of legacy, or like, is not legacy, that's not the word I'm looking for. Is there a sort of like pattern with Menzies getting these transfers from like smaller schools to come and be their point guard for like 2 years?
I don't know if he did have that at New Mexico State, but he's done it the last 2 years here. So
yeah, that's why I'm like, man, every
I think it might be more part of him just trying to build this roster, and that's sort of a temporary fix he goes out and gets because he hasn't whatever landed his point guard of the future that he's comfortable starting as a freshman or something weird like that. I think it might be more that circumstance. Hardy's going to be the number two point guard, like whenever Robotham goes to the bench, which I'm guessing Robotham's going to play like 35 minutes a game, so I don't think it'll be very much. Hardy will be the number two point guard. After that, Trey Woodbury might play some point guard. Marvin Coleman, who's a walk-on, potentially could play some point guard. But I think it's going to be Robotham for 35 minutes and Amori Hardy for a little bit more. Shooting guard, it's Amori Hardy. He's going to start there, and he's got two big roles on the team. One, he's got to be sort of the scoring guard on this team, and he's got to be the backup point guard. And he'll likely be playing, whatever, 35 minutes as well. So those two guys I sort of expect. The backups at shooting guard, Bryce Hamilton, Trey Woodbury are the freshmen. There's not really any other guards on the roster, so it's really those two after Hardy. Maybe Chris Clyburn could slide to that spot if they play a little bit bigger of a lineup. But yeah, Hardy followed by those two freshmen. Small forwards work. It's interesting.
Yeah, because I'm looking through right now the roster, and I'm like, well, he's played forward, and he's played forward, and he's played forward, and he's played forward. Who's our forward?
Small forward. Last year, there were two guys that started at small forward, Chris Clyburn and Tervell Beck. Clyburn is sort of the more natural small forward type of player. Tervell Beck is a power forward. Like, that's what his best position is, but they played him at small forward. I think it was the last 9 games of the year Tervell Beck started at small forward. Both are back, so both are options to start there again. This is the spot where we'll kind of find out what Marvin Menzies sort of wants to do with his lineup, because if you play Chris Clyburn, you're going for sort of the more natural lineup of point guard, shooting guard, small forward, and then two bigs. If you play Tervell Beck, you're going with a much bigger lineup with essentially two power forwards and a center on the floor. Or there are other options. Bryce Hamilton could end up being like the best scorer on this team. He could force his way into the lineup with his offense. So there's a chance that Bryce Hamilton starts at this spot, and he's a guard, so that's a little bit smaller of a lineup. Trey Woodbury could be the best shooter on this team, and this team's probably not going to be a great shooting team this year, so he might force his way into the lineup with his three-point shooting. You've got Joel Entombwe, who's in a walking boot right now, but he is super athletic, and he's maybe more of the power forward type too, but there's a chance he's the best defensive option at this spot, and he might force his way into the lineup if Menzies is like, we need more defense out of this position. So there's a lot of ways he could go here. If I had to guess, oh wait, we'll get to that in a minute. Big reveals coming up. What am I doing? But small forwards where it's interesting, that's where we kind of figure out what Marvin Menzies thinks of this team or sort of what he thinks they need. If he needs a shooter, maybe it's Trey Woodbury. If they need more simply scoring, Bryce Hamilton. If they need more defense, maybe Ntombwe's in there. If he just wants the most generic small forward, it's Chris Clyburn. If he wants a big lineup, it's Tervell Beck. A lot of choices.
Yeah.
Power forward, it's Shakur Justin. He's going to play like 40 minutes. They're gonna have a couple overtime games. He's going to average 42 minutes a game. That's what's going to happen. Like, there's no reason for him to come off the floor. Like, Tervell Beck is the natural backup power forward. So, like, he'll play power forward whenever Justin does come off the floor. But, like, the only reason to take Shakur Justin off the floor is to simply rest him so that he's better later on. That's it.
Can I ask a really stupid question?
Of course. That's why you're here, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Why is it that if you go to the official roster, the official listed roster, they only have one person listed as a center?
Who is?
It's Louis Bongai.
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 My best name on the pronunciation guide. So, like, Shekna Dembele is listed as a forward?
Yep.
I don't know. I wouldn't think too much into that.
Oh, no, I'm not, because why would you have the 6'10" guy play center and the 6'11" guy play forward unless you're just trying to be weird?
At the center spot, there is a chance Shakur Justin plays center. And UNLV plays a little bit smaller. They could play Beck at the power forward, Justin at center. I don't think that happens. I think Marvin Menzies loves his big men.
Yeah.
He's got him back as young. He's got Shekna Dembele. He's probably going to play one of those two guys as much as he can as a true center. Like, he just, that's what he likes to do. So I fully expect one of those two guys to be playing the majority of the game. The problem with Mbaké Jong is he led the Mountain West in fouls per 40 minutes last year. So if he's your starting center, you can't really rely on him. Oh, yeah, we're going to get 30 minutes out of him tonight. You can be like, all right, we'll get 15, maybe 20. It'll be good. And so Dembele is going to have to play some, and maybe Justin does play 5-6 minutes a game in a smaller lineup or something like that. We'll probably see a little bit of Justin doing that, but I expect Menzies to play a traditional center all of the time. So you're starting five. Noah Robotham, Amori Hardy. Shakur Justin's going to be the power forward. And Mbaké Jong is who I think starts at center. He got more playing time than Dembele last year. He's better defensively. That's really what the center spot's about, is defense, because neither one of those guys is giving you offense. The small forward spot, I think it'll be Tervell Beck. He passed Chris Clyburn last year. I think he'll be the one that starts there to start the year. If you're a UNLV fan, you probably want Bryce Hamilton to push Beck out of the lineup. Like, you want Bryce Hamilton to be so good that Marvin Menzies has to start him. Like, that's probably what makes this team better than expected, is if Bryce Hamilton is like, oh, wow, that guy can really score. He has to be in the lineup, and he's starting at small forward. So I think there's a chance something like that happens down the road. But, yeah, that's my starting lineup. Robotham, Hardy, Beck, Justin, Jong. UNLV basketball on October 3rd. Get pumped.
Is there any evidence that this will be a faster offense than last year? Like, more focus on, like...
They were pretty fast last year.
Yeah, no, pace of play, they were... I believe they started in the top... What was it, the top 25?
Well, through non-conference play, they were, like, top 10 or something like that.
Something
it fell off a little bit once they got into conference play. But they were still one of the faster teams. Let's see, their tempo last year rated 22nd overall. Offensive tempo was 19th.
It's not horrible. All right. That's it just didn't feel fast, I guess, because they'd run down and miss a dunk. And so I'd be like, oh my God, they've got the... Oh,
hey, quickly missing shots is still fast.
Yeah.
Robotham did say they expect to press more this year, which, it's preseason. Everybody says they expect to press more. I wouldn't put too much stock into that. Every offseason, it's, yeah, we're going to run more. We're going to play more up tempo. We're going to press more. And then you get in the season, it's like, yeah, not really.
So no permanent cherry picker. Got it.
Oh, they should do that. They should have done with Brandon McCoy last year.
I kind of thought they would.
They probably would have been better off. So yeah, that's my
prediction. He's not helping on the other end.
I know you love that segment right there, where I just go through my starting lineup.
I mean, I do love UNLV basketball to a point that I'm sometimes the only one in the stands yelling
I believe that.
Yeah. But I have precious little evidence that this team will produce anything other than a second-round pick if it produces that.
In the NBA draft?
I don't know what it is about UNLV players. They tend to go late in the second round.
Scored Houston. Yep. He'll be picked 54th.
Or something like that. And it's just like, what does UNLV basketball produce? We produce second-round picks.
That's good analysis. I like that.
That's basically, but I mean, I'm waiting for us to go back to that, like, high-flying speed team.
Wait, what would you, as far as, like, wins and losses or whatever, what's success to you for this UNLV basketball team?
Like, win the conference?
Oh, that's, which, like, it's a failure of a season if they don't win the Mountain West?
No, it's not a failure. Oh,
like, what's your line of this is a successful season, this is a failure season?
Go to a non-conference powerhouse and upset them would be, like, I could ride that for a couple weeks of us losing in conference.
Okay. They go to Illinois.
Ooh, the Flying Illini?
They fly?
That's a really dated reference.
I think the goal...
Heading to Champaign.
It's a very low bar, but I think the goal is be 500 in the Mountain West. They haven't done it in 4 years.
I know, but it just seems like... I always think they're going to be better than they are, and I don't... Like, I have the exact inverse of football with basketball.
Is football actually good?
No, I always assume football is going to be terrible, and it's like, oh, well, we won 3 games. That's better than I expected. And with basketball, I'm like, how do we lose to Boise? Or something like that. And it's just like, well, we don't have the talent, and I should be more rational.
They do have the talent. Technically correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try the Be Connected sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
Bischoff.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Golden Knights forward Alex Tuch has been placed on injured reserve.
We talked a long time about UNLV's starting lineup.
Every day, man.
So, Alex Tuch left the last preseason game. After the game, Gerard Gallant refused to say if it was upper body or lower body injury. The only thing he would say is that it wasn't head injury. Gallant said he was taken out of that game for precaution. Then yesterday when he talked to the media, he told everyone that Tuch would not be going on injured reserve. That was around 12:30. At 3:49, the Golden Knights sent out a press release saying he was going on injured reserve. 3 hours and 19 minutes after Gallant says, nope, not going on IR, he's on IR.
We're not sure where he's hurt, but he's not going on IR.
I told you, was that earlier this week, you haven't felt like my annoyance / anger of the Golden Knights just lying about things, not telling you about things, whatever. Here we go. We're talking 3 hours after he says, not going on IR. They put him on IR. It's kind of remarkable. Last year, Marc-Andre Fleury got a knee to the face. He stayed in the game. Afterwards, Gerard Gallant said that he wasn't hurt during the game, that he got hurt afterwards. He missed the next day of practice. It was called a maintenance day. And then he was out for 2 months with a concussion. So my only point
yeah,
is...
Good, yeah, we know exactly what's going on with the Golden Knights.
My only point is that when Gerard Gallant gives injury updates, don't believe any of it. Alex Tuch could be... His career could be over. For all we know. Like, it went from he was taken out for a precaution, it's fine, to he's not on IR. Okay, he's on IR. Like, we might never see him again, or he might be back. I think he has to miss 2 games. He might be back in the 3rd game like nothing was ever wrong. Well, no idea. No clue. That's how they do things.
And the Golden Knights will not have to expose players in the expansion.
Nailed it.
Expansion draft when Seattle joins the NHL.
Seattle's coming. They'll be team number 32 in the NHL. Good news for Vegas is that every other NHL team has to give up a player in the expansion draft.
Didn't Vegas miss out on like $600 million as part of the, or not
part of it?
Yeah, like a chunk of it.
Not 600 million.
Yeah, no, no.
But yeah, so the logic here, because it's not fair for one team to not have to give up players in the expansion draft. Like, the rest of the league is going to get the talent's going to be spread out across one more team. The Golden Knights can go sign players and not have to be worried about losing them in the future. So you can go sign with the Golden Knights and know that you're not going to be plucked by some crappy expansion team in Seattle. So it's a big advantage to the Golden
some
Knights.
Some crappy expansion team.
They're
going
to be terrible, and it's going to be hilarious. It is going to be so funny how bad Seattle is. You have no idea. It's going to be so great. So, but the reason is $650 million is the expansion fee. The other teams that do have to expose a player get to split that. Bill Foley doesn't get any of that. So the other owners get it. That's sort of the trade-off for not exposing anybody. I don't. If I was an owner, yeah, I'd take the money over some random player who's my 10th best player.
Golden Knights defenseman Nate Schmidt will not talk to the media until his suspension is over.
Should he?
Well, I was just disappointed because I thought we were going to try to get him as a guest co-host while he was suspended.
I don't think that's allowed. Shang Peng from Hockey Buzz wrote a story about this where he talked to a PR expert. And basically, she said, like, Schmidt should talk to the media if he knows why he tested positive. And he can basically win the court of public opinion by saying, listen, this is what I did. I had tainted meat or whatever. And that's why I tested positive. I wasn't knowingly taking steroids. Like, so she was like, if he can come out and basically lay out some facts and evidence and say, this is what made me test positive. I wasn't sitting here injecting steroids. Like, this is why I tested positive. And less people would call him a cheater.
I would probably recommend you going the Ryan Braun route.
Lying?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Lying and then bringing everyone else down with me.
But she also said that if he can't, like, if he might not know, like, the reports that we've read from The Athletic and places, like, he might not know. He thinks it was tainted meats, apparently. But, like, if he doesn't know and he can't, like, lay out, like, hey, this is exactly what happened, I'm not a cheater, then he shouldn't say anything at all because he'd just get ripped even more for it.
Why wouldn't you just say, yeah, I was actually kind of banged up last year and I took something that I thought was legal, but it will help me. I was told it would help me heal and it turns out that it's not. I was just stupid, but I wanted to play more. So.
Liar! See, here's the thing for me is he shouldn't talk because, like, the public, fans, and, like, the media, we are so skeptical of any excuse when a guy gets busted for steroids.
Unless you're a big fat guy who...
Unless you're Bartolo Colon, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think anybody denies that he used steroids. We're just okay with it.
Yeah.
Because he's lovable. And Schmidt's kind of like that, too. He's lovable. People are going to be okay with it. But I, like, to me, it's like, even if he came out and said, this is what I ate. Here's my receipt. Here's when I tested positive. This was in the meat. The people who ate with me also tested positive. Like, it'd still be like, yeah, you're still a cheater. Like, that's how people would still view it. So, we'll see. But apparently,
why are you eating so much meat?
Yeah, exactly.
Huh?
So, we'll see. When he does get unsuspended, when he finally does talk to the media, how he handles that, because he's presumably going to get some of the same questions.
Golden Knights defenseman John Merrill missed practice yesterday because his wife was giving birth.
Their daughter is named Jolie.
Cool.
I wonder if there's a way to hook a car seat up to a scooter.
The Athletic predicts William Karlsson will be the most disappointing player in the NHL this season.
So we'll talk to Jesse Granger of The Athletic in a minute. He did not vote on this. Tomorrow we will talk to Dom Lecision of The Athletic. He did vote on this, and he's got his math model to predict the season. He's kind of down on the Golden Knights. Why are you looking around like something's about to happen in here?
No, it's just like it seemed like the entire studio just got dark. And then it got brighter. And
the cloud went over the sun.
Yes, that is what happened. But I
know
was
it doesn't
looking,
happen here very often.
I was looking at the briefs, and when I looked up, all of a sudden the entire room had changed. Freaking me out, man!
William Karlsson got 11 votes to be the most disappointing player. The next highest player got 2. The Golden Knights were also voted to be the second most disappointing team. Only the Anaheim Ducks got more votes. The Athletic hates the Golden Knights.
New Mexico's starting quarterback is out for the season.
So they're hurting a quarterback. Sherron Jones is going to be the quarterback for this game against New Mexico, and the backups are now two guys that have basically like never played. I think one of them has a couple of snaps in his career. Reading through the Santa Fe New Mexican, New Mexico has abandoned the triple option offense the two times that Sherron Jones has come into the game at quarterback. Once was a few games ago when they apparently went to some sort of vanilla, normal type of offense to try to run out a game and end it. And then he came in last week against Liberty when they were down by like 5 touchdowns. And they were like, all right, we're going to throw it 50 times. So I don't really know what they're going to do with him as the quarterback. Are they going to run the triple option? I don't know.
So he's like a passing specialist?
For New Mexico standards?
Yeah,
he's thrown more than 5 passes. So, yeah, I think he's thrown like 60 passes this year or something. Like
he's the backup?
Yeah, he's played in like 3 games now or whatever because they've got all their quarterbacks are hurt. Like they're hurting worse than UNLV now. So a bunch of backup quarterbacks playing each other on Saturday.
The Raiders could play at Sam Boyd Stadium next season.
So this is from the San Francisco Chronicle, and it's from league sources to the San Francisco Chronicle. This is new because just last week, Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, told Vince Sapienza of Fox 5 that he doesn't think Sam Boyd can be made NFL ready.
I agree.
So that was a week ago, the owner saying, yeah, that's probably not going to happen. Now the San Francisco Chronicle is saying they might play at Sam Boyd Stadium. If you're unaware, by the way.
Have they been to Sam Boyd Stadium?
They have. If you're unaware, the city of Oakland is possibly threatening to sue the Raiders. They want like $500 million. They want the name Raiders to be left with the city of Oakland rather than the team take it with them. And the Raiders' response to this lawsuit is, if you go through with the lawsuit, we're going to leave a year early. So they have to find somewhere to play if they leave a year early.
All road games. I keep pitching it. No one likes it.
I do. Helps the tank. Apparently, according to the story, they have not reached out to Stanford or Cal or San Jose State, which are the 3 colleges in the Bay Area. San Jose State basically told the San Francisco Chronicle, like, even if they did, we probably couldn't do it. I think Stanford said basically the same thing. I think it said Stanford turned down the XFL. Like, the XFL wanted to play at Stanford Stadium, and they were like, logistically, we can't make it happen.
Yeah, that's why.
And the other option is Levi Stadium, where the 49ers play, and Mark Davis is dead set against that, even if it's the best option for his team next year. He's 100% against that. So that leaves them having to leave the Bay Area. San Diego's been mentioned. Sam Boyd Stadium has been mentioned. So, yeah, we'll see. Sam Boyd Stadium Raiders 2019. I doubt it happens. Like, I doubt this very much.
I keep pitching Boise, and no one will listen. Oh, my God.
I think they'd play 8 games in Mexico City or London. They'd make them play 4 in Mexico, 4 in London before they went to Boise. They'd probably do that before they made them go to Sam Boyd, too.
I would love the, like, color sickness. Like, you'd just be seeing the blue and the black and the silver and then someone else playing on that, and you just, oh, God.
Be great. Blue field. That's so great. I love that they have a blue field. Everybody should. Why do we have green fields?
Because you're supposed to have grass, but no one has grass anymore.
Ah, screw it. Paint the grass. Everybody's field should be a color. The Raiders should play on a black field. Why does this not happen?
Because the Athletics are somehow better, and so their field has to stay a baseball field halfway through the football season.
The more the A's win, the longer the Raiders' season is terrible at home.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Bill Foley is all of us if we were an owner.
Yeah.
Because if I owned a team, I want to tell everyone everything that I know because I want to break the news because this is my team. I paid $500 million so that I can play with this toy. Like, it's my team.
Technically Correct. Jesse Granger from The Athletic joins us. Is anybody on the ice skating yet, Jesse?
There is one person on the ice, and it's my favorite person on the entire team.
Dave Pryor?
Dave Pryor is slap-shotting at it. That's impressive that you guessed that, yeah.
Of course I know your favorite person is the goalie coach. Are you kidding me?
He is amazing. And yeah, so he's out here just ripping slappers at an empty net right now, but the players have yet to take the ice.
Wait, how many pucks does he have? Does he have like a line of them, or is he just chasing one puck down every time he shoots?
He has two, and yes, he's chasing them.
So Jesse Granger with us. He's live from City National Arena. Are there Jake Bischoff jerseys for sale, and how long is the line?
The line is stretching as far as the eye can see. I'm sorry, Tyler. There's nobody there. Nobody That's wants those jerseys.
Unbelievable. I don't even think they have them up. I went and looked the other day. It's ridiculous.
No. And if you order the jersey, it'll probably go similar to those blue and yellow Brandwagon ones. The day you get your jersey, he'll be gone.
That's just mean. Hey,
I just wouldn't count on the long term.
Well, listen,
for Jake Bischoff with the Golden Knights,
when he's leading the team and scoring after 20 games, it's gonna be hard to send him down.
You're right. You're right.
Why does the Athletic hate the Golden Knights?
Why would you say that?
Because they put out their predictions, which Jesse Granger was not a part of, and the Golden Knights were voted to be the second most disappointing team this year. William Karlsson was voted to be the most disappointing player this year. There's clearly an anti-Vegas bias at The Athletic.
I think there is a very, very heavy reliance on analytics at The Athletic, and if you look at the analytics, everyone on this team is probably expected to regress. William Karlsson should probably regress the most of anyone. Now, if you're a Golden Knights fan, the good news is, so far, everything analytics has been completely opposite with this team. The analytics have been proven wrong pretty much every time. So, if you're a Golden Knights fan, you just hope that continues. But I think guys nationally that aren't here watching this team every day are going to look at analytics, see the shooting percentages, see the point totals, see how crazy they went up last year, and just expect that, like every other team in the history of the world, it's going to regress.
So what you're saying is we have to not believe in math.
Exactly.
Good.
Jesse Granger joined a media outlet that hates the Golden Knights. You're going to be the most hated media member in the city soon, Jesse.
I seriously doubt that.
You don't think you could take Tyler's crown?
Yeah, no. Tyler has that on lock.
All right.
And there are other guys that shows at Lotus that get a lot of hate on social media as well.
Uh-oh. We're just going to let that sit. We are not going to prod that anymore. Other guys on Lotus get a lot of hate. All right. Alex Tuch. Should we ever believe anything Gerard Gallant ever says about injuries again?
Probably not. I mean, what are you supposed to do? I mean, I tweet out that Gerard Gallant just told me he's not going to be on IR. And then 3 hours later, they announce he's going on IR. And then I have all these people tweeting me saying, he's on IR, like my tweet is incorrect, except for when I tweeted it, it was correct. I don't know what to do.
Like, I don't know, to me it's incredible, the idea that it's literally 3 hours between the coach saying, yeah, he is specifically not going to go on IR, to, oh, okay, yeah, we put him on IR.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big blow to this team, obviously. I think their top two lines are one of the best in the entire NHL. Toronto's got a really good top six. Pittsburgh's got a good top six. But this is about as good as it gets. With Alex Tuch or Eric Hall on that third line, it looks a lot better. And then you've got that grinding fourth line. But, man, that third line without, like I said, either Alex Tuch or Eric Hall looks not good at all. They may have one of the worst bottom six in the league.
The hot take on our show on Monday from Ryan, the hockey guy, who does Rink Rats with Jesse Granger here, was that Alex Tuch would be the best player on the second line.
Well, he certainly
that
can't
well.
Be. I mean, he's not going to be on the second line. And and I thought from the beginning that was going to be Eric Hall's job to lose. That's just kind of how Gallant runs things. I mean, he likes to kind of give respect to the older players, to the more experienced guys, and let you get the first chance. And then if Hall fails at it, then he'll put Tuch up there. But I always thought Holland was kind of going to get that first shot at it, and now with Tuck injured, that makes that choice really easy.
So Alex Tuck on IR, Cody Eakin on IR. What is the third line going to look like tomorrow for opening night?
It's looking like Oscar Lindberg, Ryan Carpenter, and Tomasz Nosek, which Tomasz Nosek is a guy that has really, really impressed in training camp and preseason, and he's looks like maybe he's ready to make a jump to the top six. He's obviously moving up one line from the fourth to the third. My problem is, last year, Tomasz Nosek, with that fourth line, with a couple guys that don't play really offensive hockey, he didn't do much. When you put him on a line in preseason with William Karlsson and Jonathan Marchessault, so he looks amazing. So I'm worried that you put him on a line with Lindberg and Carpenter, he's going to be the same Nosek he was last year and not the new and improved Nosek we've seen this year. So, like I said, not a really flashy, not a really promising looking third line, but it's some guys that are responsible. I think they can not be a complete disaster out there while you wait for Tuck to get back.
So both Carpenter and Lindberg are going to score on Thursday.
Probably, yeah. That's usually how this works with this team, right?
Yes. So I'm curious your thoughts on sort of the defensive pairing. Nate Schmidt out for 20 games. Which pairing do you should play the most minutes every night? Like, which one should Gallant rely on more than anybody else?
I mean, Braden McNabb and Colin Miller is the easy choice. Braden McNabb played along Nate Schmidt. He was the top pairing defenseman all season last year, basically. Colin Miller is one of the more veteran guys. Nick Holden's a veteran, but he's new to this team. I think you're comfortable with Colin Miller, and they've shown a long time that they like to do the defensive stay at home with the offensive threat and pair them that way, and you have that with that grouping. Derek England and Shea Theodore is a similar thing. I just think they still don't trust Shea Theodore quite as much as they do Colin Miller. So I think those two pairings will split the time pretty evenly, but if you're asking me who's the number one pairing, it's got to be McNabb and Miller.
It's good when you say they don't quite trust the guy they just gave $5.2 million a year to.
Well, I mean, you don't trust him defensively to be a top-pairing guy. I mean, that's not what you're signing him for. If someday he is that, I mean, he's only 23. If someday he is that, then great. But what you want, what you're paying Shea Theodore $5 million a year for is for those flashy plays and to quarterback your power play. And he's going to do that. I think Shea Theodore is going to be a huge part of the power play. That's what you get the biggest boost from when Shea Theodore shows up to camp and he finally signs that contract, is your power play is now really dangerous.
All right, give me a couple of predictions here. Who scores the first goal for the Golden Knights on Thursday?
I'm going Jonathan Marchessault. So.
That's a good guess. I will always pick him because he shoots more than anybody.
Exactly, yeah. No, I had to do some predictions for who will score the most goals, and that was also Jonathan Marchessault. And I just think, kind of, like I said, along those analytics things, Jonathan Marchessault shot like 80 more times than William Karlsson or anybody else did last year. He's a really good offensive player. It's not like he's just some bad player that's just winging shots at the net. So chances are more of them will go in this year than they did last year. I also think defenses will shift more towards William Karlsson now that he's a known commodity. He'll be able to maybe get a few more assists, dish it over to Marchessault. Maybe he'll be the one benefiting from those empty net one-timers that Karlsson had so many of last year. Yeah, I think Marchessault has a really big year.
Will Ryan Reeves get power play time?
I was joking with him yesterday in the locker room, and I'm like, so are you getting some real power play minutes? And he goes, well, we're 2-for-2 when I'm out there. They can't take me out, can they? Like, I doubt it. I seriously doubt he plays power play time.
Second unit.
Unless Gerard Gallant has a play drawn up for him to jump in the air.
Yeah, that was a set play, right? That was a set play. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to do that, run some pick and roll with him, throw up the alley-oop, and just let Riley Smith slam it home, I guess.
Yeah, that's how it works. Well, he's Jesse Granger from The Athletic. We appreciate you giving us a few minutes while you're down at City National watching. How many is Dave Pryor still ripping slap shots?
He is not. So Fleury and Subban are now in goal. They're trading off. And then he's got a few guys. He's got Belmar, Reeves, Eakin, Carrier, and Carpenter are all they're doing some goalie drills for the goalies.
Sounds like the first power play unit for the Golden Knights is practicing.
Excellent.
Jesse Granger from The Athletic. We appreciate it, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
So, good to have Jesse on the phone there, live from City National Arena. We'll have to get that figured out whenever they do actual practices during our show rather than right after our show, and get live play-by-play of practice. You look confused.
The phone one of the buttons on the phone lines just broke, and so I don't know how I'm going to blame that on Clay now that he's no longer coming on after us.
All right, UNLV football time.
Yay!
We've got some audio, thanks to Mike Grimal of The Sun, from the new starting quarterback for UNLV, Max Gillum, when asked... Oh, wait, I think the question's in here, so I don't have to set it up. Go ahead with Max Gillum audio. That was brutal.
Can this team still make a bowl game?
Oh, yeah, we could definitely make a bowl game.
That was really quiet. I didn't do a good job with that audio, did I?
It also was really short.
Yeah, it was supposed to be short. I just wanted him saying, oh, yeah, we can definitely make a bowl game. So no, you don't like that?
No, it's fine. I just don't... I think he's wrong.
Oh, man. Somebody was asking me why you were so down on Max Gillum. He was a higher-rated recruit than Armani Rogers out of high school.
Except that Armani can run!
Yeah,
the best thing UNLV can do is... We have Lexington Thomas. He runs really well. We have Armani Rogers. He runs really well. You've been saying it forever. Triple option. Triple option with Armani and Lexington. I think they might average 300, 400 yards a game.
Yeah.
But he keeps getting hurt, and it makes me sad.
You ready to read Facebook comments? I love doing this. I still think you hate it, right?
It just makes me uncomfortable that we... read the people's names. And
why?
I don't...
They're commenting with their name.
I know, but there's like a sort of like weird...
Anyone can go to our Facebook page and see them commenting this.
Okay. I'm not a journalist, but
it's not like they're sending this saying off the record.
I don't know. All right. I feel uncomfortable saying it.
All right.
Dwayne Holtman.
I got to set it up.
You already set it up.
No. Armani Rogers is out for 6 weeks. Maybe. We don't know that. Posted a story at lbsportsnetwork.com and put that on Facebook. These are the Facebook comments to that story.
Dwayne Haldman. Never want to see anyone get hurt, but now we'll get a chance to see what a real college offense looks like since Max Gillum actually can scan the field and make three reads each play before deciding to run or throw it.
My favorite part about that is that Max Gillum has thrown one pass for UNLV.
Like, but it was a one read.
There's no way anyone, unless you were watching Saddleback College, knows what Max Gillum can do as a passer. So, like,
and he was on a timeshare.
There's just an assumption in that comment that Max Gillum can make three reads and throw the ball.
I don't want to throw out what I'm thinking.
Why wouldn't you?
Because there's something that's very different about Max Gillum and Armani Rogers that I think may be playing into this particular comment.
They are quite different.
Yes. Obviously, this great rushing attack we have doesn't mean much because we can't win just solely relying on the run, or we'd be 4-0 and would have already been to a bowl game last year or the year before. That was a run-on sentence. Now, not capitalized, with a quarterback that can actually complete balls consistently, two receivers now, two spelled T-W-O. This running game's going to take off even more, and we should shoot for the stars, no period.
So the argument there is that they can't win with just the running game, but now that they lost the number 8 rusher in the country, they're going to run even more.
Or they're going to be more successful at running now that they've lost the number 8.
Yes, that is solid logic there. I mean, we went over it yesterday. The numbers between when Armani Rogers was in and when he was out last year and how badly the running game was hurt.
Steve Nunn says, even with Gilliam starting, we should be able to beat New Mexico 31-17. I think he's right.
Yeah, New Mexico's really bad. Like, they should be able to run the ball against New Mexico. Like, he's kind of right there.
Yeah. Tommy Crow. Sad news, but not the end of the world. We have running backs to do the job, and now they will do their job with an accurate QB to hit the receivers. Offense may be a little better now. Time for receivers to step up.
It is kind of time for the receivers to step up.
Where are these people getting this information about his potential?
I don't know. I mean, everybody thinks that...
Don't we have practice reports?
No, not allowed. You can't report on what happens at practice. It's against the rules.
Final one. Michael Morano. Sadly, nobody in Vegas cares.
I forgot about that one. It's the truth. It is the truth. We'll have to talk more about that tomorrow in the lack of attention UNLV has gotten this week between its basketball and football programs. They opened basketball practice with a media day, and like nobody was there from the media, and nobody nationally picked up the story of Armani Rodgers being out.
Yo, suck it,
Tyler!